Welcome back, fans of the Hawk Talk podcast. We're here post-NIT game against Seton Hall for another great episode of the Hawk Talk podcast. We've had some interesting carousel of hosts on the show. At one point, me being by myself, your host, Tony. But luckily today, joined by Pete, who is sun-kissed. He's back from Hawaii, and he's ready to talk about a game that... We were so close to winning, Pete. We were so close. That would have been so nice to actually walk away with a win on that one.
Tony, it's good to be back. Last time we talked was in February, believe it or not. And yeah, it's always good to play more basketball in the month of March. So can't be upset about that. Stinks about the outcome. Tough way to end your season. With a 75-72 loss in overtime to Seton Hall. And it stinks that we were only able to score 4 points in that overtime, which felt like an eternity, but was only 5 minutes. Felt like we could have had something there, and it hurt that we didn't. I think it definitely didn't help our cause. And I think this is an interesting thing that I've been thinking about just over the course of watching these guys play is – the fact that we are such a short bench, right, Tony? Like,
yep.
Tonight he literally had a six man team, and that's just tough.
Yeah, and this is a six man team that pushed a good Seton Hall team that had pretty much everyone. I believe one of their players sat out, but he only scored like 10 points a game or something like that. I'd have to go back on the record and check. I'm no Seton Hall expert. We don't play them that often. We'll talk about that tweet about scheduling these guys more often because it was great atmosphere to this game. I got to say that, even though it was a disappointing loss, but it was, yeah, a short bench and you're relying on, you know, four guys to score pretty much. Kreist had 14, X Brown had 13, Reynolds 27, and then Fleming and Cameron Brown both had under double digit points, but that matters. Six and eight is something that, you know, you'll take. We need one or two more of those, right? We need one or two more guys who are going to score those baskets. And Finkley had no points, and Casper had two baskets, that is 4 points in total. But those, you know, those came off of some really open looks in the dunker spot, which is just imagine if we actually put, you know, someone else in the dunker spot. It's a little bit more athletic. And he had 3 turnovers, right? So those 3 turnovers kind of mitigate anything else that Casper had done that game to some degree. So I would say some moments for me, Pete, where there were great moments of basketball, kind of what I just mentioned. Like some of the passing looked really crisp, and there were some really nice, just like we're finding open guys underneath the basket. Man, does that look good? Man, does that feel good? But then there's the spout of threes that just come raining down with 8 minutes to go. And it was even I think we were lucky that we even got it to overtime, if you're asking me. But I would say the biggest disappointment there was potentially not even getting a shot off to end the game, because we could have just ended it right there. You don't really want to go to overtime when you're on the road.
Yeah, I really could have used a timeout there, and we had one to kill. So that was tough. 30 seconds left. Crosses the half court line. I'm thinking to myself, why don't we call a timeout there when we just called a timeout with 7 seconds left on the shot clock in the prior possession? Obviously, we see what Billy can do when he draws, you know, side out plays, blob plays, but there's nothing there. And that was just a painful way to see that end of regulation
and transpire. I was going to say about that, like we had drawn up some inbound plays. It wasn't like he was like, no excuse to say like, I'm scared to inbound the ball with not a lot of time left, you know?
Yeah, no, it just made a lot of sense for us to, in that scenario, call a timeout, use that timeout. You can't take them with you. And yeah, it's tough. I mean, all week I've been hearing about how Seton Hall should be, and the Big East, you know, Dayton stole Seton Hall's bid, basically. So that being said, like, there was a lot of hype coming around the Seton Hall team, and so it was interesting to see how we matched up, because from an athletic standpoint, a size standpoint, the 3-bid league guys said this: we looked the part, we looked like the Big East team. Seton Hall, they looked basically to be the same size as us, right? Same size, same athleticism. So from that end, we looked good. But it's just tough when you shoot 26% from the field from three and you take 38 threes. Like, it's, I don't know. That is the brand.
Yeah.
So there's nothing new to complain about, but it's just when things don't go your way, you're like, oh man, if we only took a few less threes and we worked the ball around a little bit more and we got those easy, quick baskets that you're talking about, which looked great. Like, Kreese, one of his most efficient games of the year, you know, like that was beautiful. And if we could have seen a few more pick and rolls from Fleming and Eric or X, that would have been great.
Yeah.
6 points from Rashear. He was getting what he wanted when you got the ball to him in the right spot. So
Kreese had one pass to Fleming. I was like, oh, and Fleming didn't finish at the rim. I forget. It was like later in the game. There's a couple moments like that where you're just like, oh man, that was an easy dunk. And, you know, Seton Hall, of course, brings two guys to block it, but refs really held their whistles as well. Something that, you know, maybe fans would want to know. It was definitely a rough and tumble game, but I liked it. It was like very on brand. It was like, that's what college basketball is. It was played not in the Prudential Center, which was not, I kind of like it. I kind of like when you play college basketball in a full field house and you hear people on the TV screaming, you can actually hear them yelling at the floor. So there's a lot to like about that game. I know we're kind of straddling back and forth between the goods and the bads, but I think that's a way to describe this game. It stinks. We lost. It stinks that the season ended, but man, watching that, there was like, we hung with the biggest Big East team. Like, there is no excuse. The Big East isn't better than us. Of course, they've got better teams, but we're not scared of hanging with them. We play Villanova every year. Get Seton Hall on the schedule, Pete. Get these guys on the schedule. What are they thinking? They're not thinking. That's the problem. And no one's going to listen to this, but Seton Hall versus St. Joe's, NJ versus Pennsylvania, throw St. John's in there. Battle for the who's the real SJU. There's so many great options that we do a constant play against Temple, Villanova, which is a great matchup. We know that we can hang it with good teams. Do the same thing with the other tri-state. Get the tri-state game going. And I think it's a really big missed opportunity because New York is a basketball town that doesn't have the basketball culture college-wise. That is, it's not as strong as what I'm going to say. Oh, someone's going to come in here, Fordham, and oh yeah, Fordham, real strong basketball culture. Or, you know, and then Seton Hall, which is technically in New Jersey, pretty far from the city, if you ask me. It's about an hour's drive, like a real drive. And St. John's is on Long Island. There's no real city school, so it's like, how do we get basketball to be interesting in New York? How do we make that a recruiting center? Because UConn is in that territory, and they're going to dominate that city. And don't think twice about that. They're going to be, those guys are going to be watching those elite people who live in Connecticut who root for UConn and go into the city. They're going to have their sway in the market. So I think it's a great opportunity for them, and they're missing out on it. Not to bring us on a tangent, but watching today was just proof. It was like, there's no excuse for these guys not to play us. And it doesn't matter. And I tweeted this out. It doesn't matter what they schedule because they got screwed anyway. So play us, you know? Didn't help you guys anyway.
Like, they've been talking all week about how, you know, their scheduling was so good because they play all these teams in the Big East. They St. John's and Providence scheduled a weaker St. John's, Providence, yes, too, and Seton Hall had a weaker non-conference schedule than their conference schedule, and that came back to bite them in the butt. This is a perfect example of one of those teams that they are ducking and they shouldn't be ducking. I went to go down to see the UBS Arena in Elmont, Iona St. Joe's game, right? It was Iona St. Joe's, Delaware, Bryant, URI, and who's the sixth team in that? Blanking here. Towson. There's no reason that St. John's or Seton Hall or some local New York school wasn't there to represent beside Iona. It made zero sense. The fact that we had people from Philadelphia and Rhode Island and Delaware playing in Elmont, New York made zero sense. Make it a must-see basketball game. I love UBS Arena, but invite St. John's, invite Seton Hall, or play at the Walsh, play at Pagan, play somewhere like in a smaller venue, make it a packed arena, add the venue element where people are enjoying the charm of being in a packed arena instead of this corporate
plate.
Yeah,
the fat cats.
Fat cats out of here. That's what Tony. I love your idea, and I think it's not going to happen though.
No,
they're just
they're cowards.
They just want money, and they want to beat up on teams and get their net ranking to go up. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and listen to this first four. Listen to this first four. St. Peter's 70-59. Okay, so I'm not going to read the scores because these were all wins, so it doesn't really matter. But I want to read the scores for the teams they lost to. So listen to this. St. Peter's, Fairleigh Dickinson, University of Albany, Wagner. Okay, maybe two of those games should be warm-up games. But play St. Joe's is a better, it's a lesser opponent than going like on the road to a Big Ten school. And they have Northeastern in here too. Sub one of those teams out, put St. Joe's in. That's not that big of an ask. And if you're that good, if you're a Big East program, okay, playing an A-10 school is going to give you a little bit more accreditation on those wins than you will be you Albany or Wagner, because you know we're a team that just beat, you know, we had beaten Villanova in the beginning of the season. You know, I'm not saying that we're world beaters, but we strengthen your schedule a little bit more than you Albany or Wagner. And then they go to USC and they lose by 10. No, that was at home, though. I think that was a neutral site. Excuse me. USC. And then they play Baylor. They lose 78-60. They lost to Rutgers. Like, I know Rutgers is a better basketball school, but they played Monmouth as well. So you could sub that game out for a St. Joe's game. And then they played Missouri, which, okay, you're playing an SEC school, but I would name a bunch of other schools I would try to play before I play Mizzou for basketball standpoint. And then they get into Big East play. So there's at least six opportunities there where they went total cupcake, you know? And we played, think of this, we played Charleston. They're in the tournament, are they not?
It's ridiculous. I'm trying to find right now the quote from Izzo so I can quote him exactly.
Oh, yeah, and I saw that. I know exactly where you're going. It's terrible.
It plays exactly into this, but like the opposite. Izzo says, while everybody likes the upsets in the first round, I'm not sure if that's true as it goes on. And basically to say, like, people shouldn't schedule mid-majors. And like, that's what it's saying, right? Like, he's saying the auto bids for mid-majors should stop. So why schedule mid-majors at that point, right? I think we have to go in the other direction. If the committee's sitting down this year and they're saying, wow, this is a crap hole, let's see what we can do. And if they're curious about how to actually improve the quality of basketball, improve it by incentivizing teams to schedule mid-majors. Incentivize that. That would be how you solve some of these scheduling issue problems and how you increase everybody's like wanting to improve their strength of schedule, because now it's like the net and being able to beat on teams is what gets you up in the rankings. And that's just so backwards.
You're not going to like this take, Pete. Well, maybe you will like this take, but Tony's going to bring the heavy hand of the government on this one, and the NCAA being that rule regulator. Regulate how many conference games every conference can have. We're going to have uniformity, so you can't hide behind your conference schedule. Go, we got 20 Big East games we got to play this year. Nope, everyone who is eligible for Division I NCAA men's tournament basketball can only play 16 games a season. Now, if you want to go make your conference 14 times bigger because you want to try to round everyone up into the ACC and gate it off, go be my guest. You can only play 16 games, though. Everything else needs to be non-conference, and on top of that, I'm going to use even more force. You can't play in the tournament unless you play X amount of teams in non-conference, like non-Power Five. So the Big Ten needs to have at least three A-10 teams on the schedule, and one MAC team, and however we want to figure it out, you know, you could have one team play all three A-10 teams if you want. But the conference balance has to be in that way. I mean, what else is the point of conferences then? If every school gets to schedule how they ever want, then there's no point of a conference body other than to, like, just to preserve the cash grab. So let's use the conferences in order to pigeonhole schools to make sure that they play other conferences. And let's hold them to account. We're going to categorize them that way. You're in a conference. We're going to categorize you. You got to do these X amount of games, and we don't care. And you know what? They're going to go, we're going to go create our own tournament. And you know what? It won't be March Madness. And, you know, we're kind of in that political moment. And I'm saying political in the sense that you don't make a threat you can't keep. And let them threaten us. You know, in sales, you learn about something called, you learn how to walk away from the sale. You don't make a threat you can't promise. So I would come with this ultimatum. The NCAA's got to have a spine when they do this, though. Of course, this would never happen, right? We're talking about spines in the NCAA, holding teams accountable. This is not the bureaucratic body we know and hate. But if I was a dictator of the NCAA, that's exactly what I would do. And I would say, yeah, go then. See ya. Because you know what? It's not college basketball anymore then. Then the sport's dead and you killed it. And we'll just do our own little thing, I guess, and it'll just be traditional. And you know what? We can give our scholarships to regular sports because all your football school stuff that takes opportunities from non-revenue-generating athletes, get them out of here. You know, Tony's been affected by football. You can tell that. I can tell you that much. I paid a lot more for school because some football player had to go play football, you know, because the NFL won't pay for a minor league system.
I worry, Tony, that the reason that all this, like, all this, these quote unquote issues happened this year with who made it to the tournament and who didn't make it to the tournament, the reason that the committee did this purposely, committee did this so that they can say, we had to fix this. We had to fix
smoke the screen. Tournament. Absolutely.
It was a broken system. We have to expand it. We have to make sure that we get more automatic qualifiers for Power Six schools. We need to figure out ways to increase revenue by having more games played. I think that that's what the landscape is, and I think it could end up even being like NIL money involved in this. Like, you win the tournament or you win such and such games, NIL money.
You know, Catholic education was not built on money. We're built on the idea of educating people with people who literally worked for free. And to see it all just go down the drain is disgusting. It makes me want to give less on the day of giving. St. Joe's pinging me in the middle of the day. What the heck do you guys want? You're using St. Joseph? You're using the greatest saint in heaven, not named Mary, of course, to get money out of my pocket? And this is how I feel about the NCAA. Oh, it's disgusting. The movement starts now. I hope people are like, yes, revolution. I'm going to create my own tournament. It's the Tony's Tournament of Champions.
They even brought it up today on the broadcast. They're thinking about making the NIT a 9-day event in Las Vegas. You know what that means. It's going to be all about strippers. NIL.
Oh, but, sorry. No.
That too. And Rick Pitino lost his job for it. Now,
yeah. I think. Take that. The wrong SJU. You messed with the wrong SJU, pal.
There were some people hoping for Pitino to take the job after Martelli was fired. That's all I'm saying.
Can't deny that. I was one of them.
But no, I mean, like, there's nothing sacred anymore. Like,
nope.
Fortunately, the transfer portal bug hasn't hit St. Joe's yet. And I shouldn't even be saying this.
Oh, you're just so opening us to life. Way to end welcome to the St. Joe's Hawk Talk podcast. We're just going to be recapping all the problems of the season, and Peter is feeling down and down and down. People, we don't record the videos, but Peter does not look good. The sun-kissed look is not there anymore.
I'm pale as a ghost.
He's pale as a ghost. He looks scared. He's shaking.
Yeah, I didn't even record purposely when we beat George Mason because I was just so nervous that since I didn't talk to begin with, I shouldn't talk during March. Didn't talk for the NIT, and this is look what I just did. I'm walking into all sorts of traps and getting us into all sorts of unlucky situations. Just
he's bringing it back to St. Joseph's. He's silent St. Joseph. Silent St. Joseph. My man doesn't say a single word. Whole story. That's what Pete is, bringing it back to St. Joseph's Day of Giving. Finding every which way we can do it.
So I think that brings us to a natural point where we have to talk about the fact that we have a beer that we made, and we're not getting any of the kickback.
Well, we didn't make any of it, first of all. We didn't, like, come up with, like, the formula or, like, age the damn beer, but, like, Pete came up with the marketing. Pete, the one guy who didn't go to the Hob Palace School of Business, came up with the marketing scheme, which goes to show how valuable a marketing degree is. I meant that in so much offense to all marketing listeners here. As someone in the accounting school of business, yes, we carried you all in, what was that thing called? It was ever that senior project. I totally forget now what it was called. Policy. The accounting team, the accounting crew would just carry the marketers. It's just like the same story all over again. This time it's the biology guy here. And you should have been coming up with the freaking formula for the beer.
Yeah. Hazy IPA? Who's going to drink that? Sorry, not me. I'm not an IPA guy. Should have been a lager. Should have been an ale. Come on. Hazy IPA? That's the worst type of IPA. The only benefit to that is that it's probably high in alcohol content, and you probably have to sip it slow, so enjoy more beer. But shouldn't have been. It should be a very drinkable beer that, like,
this guy's giving out IBUs.
That IBU is too high.
And it's so funny because you live in an area where, like, New England IPAs are just as, like, hazy, and you just can't stand it. That's hysterical.
Can't stand it. Are you kidding me? People around me talking about, oh, try this new IPA. Get out of here with your IPA. Give me a...
And what was the... Tell the fans, for those who didn't see our tweets, what was the name of the beer?
Oh, it's called the Hawk Will Never Die Hazy IPA.
And you wanted to call it the Hawk Sauce, right?
Yeah, I wanted to go Hawk Sauce or Hawk Won't Die Red Ale. Which
Red Ale would have been a good idea. That would have been, like, such a good idea. That's, like, perfect idea.
Yeah, I mean, Crimson Ale. Even,
Crimson Ale.
You know?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Going into Hagen, you see everyone walking around with this red beverage, and you're saying to yourself, let me get one of those. Come on. The beer sells itself. And they better have this beer at Hagen. Like, Conshohocken
Brewery.
That's
so easy. Like, that's such an easy win for them. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, should have.
Oh, Pete, we didn't talk about this. Can you report that the beer prices are up? I don't know if we talked about this at Hagen. I mean, the Hawk beer is going to be like $20.
It's true. So, do you remember Freddie from Campion?
Oh, I remember Freddie.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Greg, who made the omelets.
Oh, no.
That's a name.
That is a name. Freddie sometimes made omelets too, but maybe not as well. Yeah, not as well as Ed. But no, so Freddie got me my Yingling, and we were talking about how the beer, he was also talking about how the beer prices have gone up. I think they're $7.50. It's been a while since I was back there, but yeah, $7.50. Can you believe that?
Yeah, the corporate fat cats. We should be brewing our own ale like Trappist monks. You know, that's what the priest used to do. Remember, this is going to be totally tangent. I don't care at this point because what else we could talk about? Like St. John's basketball, like stats. Yeah. Remember when, and this might be a little older knowledge for some, and some are going to be blown away, but there was a point in time in me and Peter's tenure at St. Joe's, kind of like the changing of the guard and the coaches, when they changed the guard of how the omelets were made. They used to make the omelets on the flat top griddle. That was Greg. Greg made the omelets there. You would sweat in your eggs. And then they moved that because you used to stand in a big line. They'd be all in the big griddle. He would like take the cardboard eggs and just like pretty much lay them out on the big grill. And they just cook them in strips. And then they switched to the pan. They thought, let's... You know, Aramark has got such bad ratings on the food. We're going to put them in individual pans, make you feel a little bit fancy. And they would just, like, let the egg just... It turned out to be like a frittata. It wasn't even like an actual omelet. And it was not made French style. I could tell you it was not a French style omelet. It was clearly an American Western. But not to get into the whole difference between the two types of omelets, I was just saying that was a big change. I think about that sometimes.
No, it's good to think about because there's on two different sides of Campion, too. Like, you have one in the corner, its own little hut, and then all the way on the other side, and then they threw in a pasta bar behind us.
They did throw the pasta bar. Remember they had the taco stand for like a hot year? Like it was my sophomore year. There was like, they had just this taco stand, like ground beef, standing bit of ground beef that just like sat there all day. And that was, that fueled me to some great races when I was in college. The smoke screen deployed in the middle of the race. Whoa! Someone had the tacos for lunch. He was not ready for that one.
No, I think Champion had some elite memories for me, and obviously it fueled some great races too. I think, I don't know. It was interesting to see Freddie and say hi to him. Just kind of reminds you how small the university it is. Saying he was like, "What's up? Like, how's it going?" So that was cool.
It's so also funny when you go to like big colleges. Like I went to like a Northwestern game, kind of recapping the season. You come to Hagen, you're just like, man, we are just like a shoestring budget org. Like it's just like the concession stands look amateur. Like the stadium's small. I mean, I love it. I mean, I'm never going to say no. It's just funny when you actually go to these programs and you're like, yeah, these things are money machines. It kind of puts it all into perspective, kind of going back to that conversation we just had about getting into the tournament, because every tournament wins an extra $1 million from the NCAA, and those guys have thirsty budgets. It's just crazy to look at that. And you go to St. Joe's and you're like, man, these guys could never survive. Like these student athletes have no idea what it's like just to. And St. Joe's is a decent one compared to like the small schools in Division I basketball. Like, just to put it into perspective, we think we're pretty lucky if we went two steps down the rung and then had to play in another gym that's Division I, but man, they're like small schools. So you never realize what you got.
Yeah, you don't realize what you got. And like the money thing too, it's just going to become more and more of like a like school with more money. They're just going to do better. Honestly, it's just the fact that you can now literally, it's coming to a point, players are going to get contracts. That's going to happen. And schools that can write better contracts and get players to stay are going to do better. And hopefully, I mean, I think contracts would help a school like us, like have a guy like Rashier Fleming or Eric Reynolds or X Brown sign a 2 or 3 year contract with stipulations that you can't leave. Unless certain criteria are met, I think that's a good thing. I think that would really be a nice equalizer to also have somewhere to say, you know, this will help the player in the long run, because a lot of these negotiations, they're all verbal, right? Like people are just being told, no, you come here, you get $250,000 in NIL. That might not happen. That might not come to fruition. Have a contract. Right.
And I was going to say contract, because no money's free money, and that's going to creep in. It's going to creep in. Like all of a sudden, it's not going to be a gold mine in the sense that there's a boom. There's always a boom, but then the rules catch up. Someone's going to implement a rule, and it hopefully it's for the better, where it kind of stabilizes everything. But yeah, we're kind of in the void of rules. The NCAA has kind of dropped the ball, and now we're just in a madness. And at some point, someone's going to find a clever way to pay players, as you said, while still fulfilling the goals of the university, that it's more stable than just one-year contracts. Because even in the professionals, they don't do that.
Yeah, and it's got to stabilize. Because schools like St. Joe's, I mean, I'm sure they are doing great things with the NIL collective. But year to year, being able to fulfill the same needs, that becomes an issue too. Like 5 years down the line, you have to think, oh, how do we keep this fund up to the standard that we've set for ourselves? That becomes really tricky, because, cool, you got a great contract this year. You have to pay this guy, another guy, 5 years down the line. Where's that money coming from? And it has to become a continuous source, right? You have to find someone who's willing to put X number dollars down. That's worrisome. For smaller universities, that's an issue.
I'm trying to think, like, of a strategy where we, you know how they call you for like the donations, the talk track, I'm in sales, so I'm thinking about the sales talk track, should just be, don't you want a team in the Final Four? Like whenever they're just like, soliciting me for money for the university. It should just be all about the basketball program. It should be like, this is all NIL money. Like, every call that they give me, it's like, oh, we're not buying a new women's, like, you know, men's dormitory or something like that. No, the call is like, we're flush for the Final Four. Like, I'm just trying to think of the sales pitch we could give, but, like, that should literally just be it, and then just use that money. And I mean, at this point, who cares? Like, let's just bang away at that drum and just say, we're going to pay to play.
Hey,
and we could raise the money.
This is Peter from the SJU Alumni Association. Let me tell you today about a 401k for the NIL collective. You put 5% of your salary down. It all goes to the collective. You know, your money directly to Eric Reynolds' pocket.
Yeah.
I signed up for a 401k for the St. Joe's basketball. You kidding me? 5%? Yeah, whatever.
Match. We'll find a way to match it. There's got to be kind of some tax loophole, too. I don't know. We could find so many loopholes. It just I mean, at this point, playing nice guys never got us very far. Like, let's just exploit. This is our time, you know. Like, let's exploit and just pay these guys. Pay them. And just recruit. It's just contact. Like, all people care about is good basketball.
Yeah, honestly, that's all I care about. As soon as I make my big butts, they're all going to the St. Joe's basketball. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yes, you're going to come up with a new beer.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to donate all the proceedings to the NIL. Like, those guys should be, like, funding it. That beer should be, like, it's a $6 beer. Half the money goes to the NIL. Boom. There you go, guys. Pete just came up with the marketing. I just came up with the business strategy for it. You benefit yourselves. You benefit the program. People know it's happening. Like that's where the money's going. Like, that would drive so many sales. Just like at the concession stand, that's all we said.
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's a genius idea. And I mean, you're already starting this initiative and this collaboration between a university and a beer company. It could just be a really cool thing to do. I don't know. But I like the idea.
Yeah, exactly. We just need to market it, get it in some hands of some important people. You think we can send some to the Pope? You think he would drink it? Maybe after Lent, you'd have crack open a beer.
I think
he already visited the school.
Yeah, if we make it into like a
Ignatius IPA, boom.
Yeah, definitely. It can't be an IPA. We can't be sending them.
I'm trying to think like words that like stout, you know, like if we got a stout, but what would we name it after? You know, like the City Line Stout? The Winfield Wit Beer? There we go. We're getting, you know, a little wit beer in here.
Lang Gang Hefeweizen?
The Lang Gang Lager. That's easy. Triple L.
LGL.
Lang Gang Lager. And it'll be a crisp lager. Helles on Hawk Hill. Helles, yeah. We have some German beer. There's a lot of great marketing tools, man. Just now you just go invent the beer. What's a P for Pilsner?
Papa Martelli's Pilsner.
The Phil Pills.
Phil Pill.
Phil Pill. And we'll just name it that. And we won't even, you know, we don't put Martelli in there. We just say Phil. It could be anyone. It could be Dr. Phil. But we all know what it is.
You know, this is a pitch for Phil to get back to Hawk Hill and to, you know, I hear he did you know this, Tony? Phil used to have his own Hawk Talk podcast where he would be the host and Lenardi, he would interview
Lenardi.
Yeah, they
did it at, what's it called? What was the bar? Oh, what was the bar? They used to record at a bar.
Not the Ballot Inn, right?
No, not the Ballot Inn. It's not Kincaid's or... It was something like that. It was in Maniac, I remember. They picked like some kind of Irish... It sounded like Irish bar, I forget. Man, it's been so many years. I remember the freaking Omelet Station. I don't remember the bar names. Can't say that I was going out to many bars, though. Well, now we're the official Hawk Talk podcast. Let's just settle that score right now. We're probably more dynamic 1-2 than those two. No offense to Mr. Lenardi. Maybe a little offense to Phil, though.
Phil can come on. He'll be the host. He can ask us some questions.
Yeah. Phil, open invitation.
Yeah.
He liked one of my tweets once. I'll never forget it. It was about like LaSalle. I'm like, what? Yeah, the Phil Pill. The Phil Pilsner. People would drink it.
Oh, yeah.
The Lunardi Lager.
The Lunardi Lager.
Dude, there's so many. Unfortunately, Martucci doesn't get anything.
No, not yet. But, you know, we could open this up to the Big Five, maybe. You know, like the Southwest Philly Floater. And it could be like a root beer float. Root beer float. There you go.
The Villanova Vino. Because, you know, that's like perfect for them. You know, those pretentious Villanova people. That's so perfect.
Everyone else has beards except Villanova.
Yeah, Villanova gets wine.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so we've got some great ideas. I forget what was the brewing hall? Is it, what's the brewing company's name?
Conshohocken Brewing Company.
We'll stop saying their name after that because they haven't paid for ad space. But if they want to talk to us, we just did a whole segment for them. So, you know, if anything, I'm going to send them the billable hour.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Wow, we've gotten so off track. But we've talked about some good stuff. We've talked about some good stuff.
All right, so it's been lingering on my mind. I probably can't.
It only took 40 minutes. Here we go. Something juicy's coming out. Give it to me, Pete.
So I may have been wrong about Kasper. I think in the late season, he definitely improved, right? And the fact that we went to a 7-man rotation and he was a big part of that, there were moments where he looked really good. And I think this offseason, if I could just crap on all the players, maybe they'll improve incrementally, just like Kasper. So
wow.
That's my call. Pete? I think everyone... Yeah.
That, first of all, he's hiding this at the back end of the podcast. This is that part where everyone's tuned out because of the stuff we just said for the last 20 minutes before this. Then he goes and says, I was wrong about Kasper, but I wasn't wrong in how I criticized. Like, just literally, you're the Donald Trump of this podcast. You're hiding it, and then you just flipped it where you said, you know what? It was all me. I was great. I was the best. And now I gotta shit on everyone else.
Billy, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Wow. This guy has no shame.
With my family friends, they were like, why does Billy have so many assistant coaches? What does he need all those coaches for? Well, he's got another coach right here. I coached up Kasper a whole ton. You know, he came over from Poland, made zero progress in 2 or 3 years. I say one comment on the podcast. He's had the best stretch of his career. I think I'm to be thanked.
You think you can turn the ship around with Christian Winborn? we too far out the door for that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit too far gone there, but that and this is another thing. People say this all the time. You know, really wish the best for him, and I do. You just think about the fact that it could have been a really great year of developing alongside of some really good guards and seeing some really good defensive possessions because of him. And that's what I still think about, is how you obviously want to see him land somewhere nicely in the portal, because I think that only helps us. Same time, really sitting out a year, I don't know how much of that extra year of eligibility really helps you that much.
And think about it. Today we would have needed him.
Absolutely.
So why are you leaving? If Reynolds is going to the NBA, you play next year.
Guess what? Sheen Holloway sees you and he's like, wow, could use another guard. Here your play time's not that great. You have a great game against him and who knows?
And like, I don't think there's, I mean, now correct me if I'm wrong, but is there anyone coming in next year? No, that's going to like really replace minutes?
No.
No.
Not really. Not considerably.
Yeah, so if you had just been patient, and maybe you were making some mistakes, because there were some mistakes in the beginning of the season when he was playing, turning the ball over too much and stuff like that, where, okay, it's just a bad spell. We can turn you around. Just let Pete say something nasty about you, and your game will improve.
How many other places do you really get to go to that you can make mistakes like that, and the team will still play you?
And we'll be a good team.
Like, yeah.
A chance to have a magic run that you don't get. Conference, there's only 20 conferences in basketball. You don't get to win them all. Now, someone's going to be like, you're a hater. Nah. But you know what? I mean, how many times do we have to clarify? We wish the guy luck. Yeah, of course we wish the guy luck. I'm not telling this guy to stop playing basketball ever again. It's just, I'm thinking about it. It's like, you know, this is some of the downfalls to the transfer portal where it's like, not only is this an opportunity for him to learn how to become a better basketball player, it's an opportunity to grow as a person. Because when you go in the working world, you don't like the situation you're in. Yeah, you can go leave jobs, but times get tough. You got to learn how to buckle down and get through stuff, you know? And I think about that today as an adult, and I think that's a great learning opportunity where things will go your way. And it happened to me as a runner where I had some seasons that didn't go well, but I didn't like look to transfer because some of it was to blame on me. And sometimes they brought in freshmen that were better than you, and you had to find a way to, you know, where am I going to contribute on the team? Do I have to change my event? You know, in track and field, I think about that. But for a player like him, do I have to change my style of play? Do I actually have to develop? Do I have to actually learn something? Those are important skills. It's important skills. It takes a lot of humility to do that.
Yeah, this is all about the larger college basketball landscape. We're incentivizing people to not want to grow that way. And it's just like you learn a lot from being in the same place. How many employers are going to want to hire you after you stay somewhere for a year on your first job? The first job, right? I stayed there for a year, didn't go my way. So, you know, that's not great.
No, you don't learn.
But for credit to that's, again, this is a huge offseason, right? You need to retain players. And part of that comes down to, like, having a good environment. And it seems like it is a good environment. Maybe just some people just aren't ready for the test, right?
Yeah. So we'll see. Wow, what happens if this reverses it? Oh, that would be insane. Because then just the podcast will say whatever it needs to at this point.
Yes.
People speak anything into existence, which is fine by me.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like I know we'll kind of wrap it up here a little bit, but I'm sure there'll be more episodes within the next couple. I know we're going to have like, it's going to be a little crazy, but we'll find time to talk about the team and where to move forward. We'll bring Matt on. We'll talk to Riley Frain, or he's our boots on the ground, all of us. I'm going to have him call in live one time. Maybe next year we'll have him call in live. But I hope everyone's listening to this and ready for some great March Madness, because best time of the year. St. Joe's is done, but college basketball is, and I'm so excited for tomorrow.
Absolutely. I mean, like, it all comes back to the fact we had an extra 45 minutes of basketball today, and that's a beautiful thing. And that's why we do it, because we love college basketball. We'll keep on having these conversations as the off season goes on, because we love college basketball and we know a lot of people who love college basketball and want to talk St. Joe's hoops. So that's what we're going to do.
Pete,
Tony, you
got to ask who you riding with, who's in your bracket. Who do you got winning it all?
So I have winning it all UConn.
Okay. Wait. Who winning it all? Your best upset. Cause you got to have an upset in there. Give me those two.
Best upset. Let me hear who you have while I think
about
who.
So just to recap, Pete has UConn winning the whole thing. I've got Iowa State.
Iowa State. Wow, that's an upset in itself.
I'm rocking with the Big 12. Rocking with the Big 12. And then the best upset I have, Kansas. I have Kansas being upset in the first round, but that's because of an injury. I mean, they could win, but I don't think that's like really too spicy of an upset. I've got Duke losing pretty early. And I think some people would look at that and go, that's probably the biggest upset you could get on the schedule here. I'm pulling it up just to make sure that I'm right in that I had. Yep, I have Iowa State. And then I would say my biggest upset is going to be, I've got one where I've got James Madison beating Duke in the round of 32. I know that's not the first game, but I'm looking into that. I'm seeing some good 12s and 13s that I want to ride.
That's interesting. I actually have that same upset. I really like JMU this year.
I have them beating Wisconsin and then beating Duke. I think that would be the biggest like pairing of upsets.
No, I could see them doing it. I have Colgate over Baylor just because you got to go with Langle, you know?
I'm so scared to do that because I know Baylor's going to win.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't want to go against the guy because he's a good coach, but I just think Baylor is just like too good. Like, they're actually really good.
Yeah.
Duke's a fraud. And any Big Ten team, my number, and I tweeted this out, the Big Ten's the most fraudulent league in all of basketball. All I hear in Chicago is Big Ten, Big Ten, Big Ten. Oh my, they're terrible.
Well, we'll see. We still have a lot of college basketball ahead of us, so it's a great, great day.
And I want to pick Grambling so bad. Let's bounce Purdue again. Let's do it, folks. Give me a second Purdue loss. Another fraudulent team.
I'm rooting for any team we also play this year. So, Charleston, really want to see them catch a win, too.
Yep. Yep. And that's, obviously. And I actually have them beating Alabama. I'm rocking with them.
Same. I think that would be an awesome win.
So, well, me and Pete just read off our whole board at this point because everything else doesn't matter. You pick those games right and you get your winner, you're good on any pool you're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, Pete, we'll have more episodes for the fans. I don't have much to say other than that was a good win. We fought hard. And then it was a good chat. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. I got some good laughs today.
Yeah, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you got a few laughs in. And as always, the Hawk will never die.